1 Samuel chapter 1. And there was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim in the hills of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zephu, and an Ephraimite. He had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the name of the second, Peninnah.
Yeah.
And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And that man went up from his city from year to year to worship and sacrifice before Jehovah of hosts in Shiloh. And the sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests to Jehovah there. And came the day that Elkanah sacrificed. He would give to his wife Peninnah and all her sons and her daughters portions. And to Hannah he gave one double portion, for he loved Hannah. Jehovah had shut up her womb. And even to the vexation, her rival tormented her, so as to make her tremble, because Jehovah had shut up her womb. And so he did year by year, as often as she went up to the house of Jehovah, so she provoked her. And she wept and did not eat. Her husband, Elkanah, said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart afflicted? Am I not better to you than 10 sons?" Hannah rose up after eating in Shiloh, and after drinking, Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the side post of the temple of Jehovah. She was bitter of soul and prayed to Jehovah. She wept copiously. She vowed a vow and said, "O Jehovah of hosts, if you will certainly look upon the affliction of your maidservant, and shall remember me, and not forget your maidservant, and shall give to your maidservant a man-child, then I will give him to Jehovah all the days of his life, and a razor shall not go up on his head." And it happened, when she prayed long before Jehovah, Eli was watching her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart only. Her lips moved, but her voice could not be heard. Eli thought that she was drunk. And Eli said to her, "How long will you be drunken? Put away your wine from you." Hannah answered and said, "No, my lord, I am a woman pained in spirit. And I have not drunk wine or fermented drink, but I am pouring out my soul before Jehovah. Do not put your maidservant down for a daughter of wickedness. For from the abundance of my complaint and vexation until now, I have been speaking." Eli answered and said, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel give you your petition which you have asked of him." She said, "Let your maidservant find grace in your eyes." The women went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. They rose up early in the morning and worshiped before Jehovah. They went back and came to their house in Ramah. Elkanah knew his wife Hannah, and Jehovah remembered her. It happened when the time had come around, Hannah conceived and bore a son. She called his name Samuel, saying, "Because I have asked him of Jehovah." And the man Elkanah and all his house went up to sacrifice to Jehovah, sacrifice of the days, and to vow his vow. Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "Until the boy is weaned, then I will bring him, that he may appear before Jehovah and remain there forever." And her husband Elkanah said to her, "Do that which is good in your eyes. Remain until you wean him. Only may Jehovah confirm his word." The woman remained and suckled her son until she had weaned him. When she had weaned him, she brought him up with her, along with three bullocks and one ephah of flour and a skin of wine. She brought him to the house of Jehovah at Shiloh. The child was a young one. They slaughtered the bullock and brought the boy to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, may your soul live. My Lord, I am the woman who stood with you here to pray to Jehovah. I prayed for this child, and Jehovah has given my petition, which I asked of him, to me. I also have loaned him to Jehovah. All the days which he shall live, he is loaned to Jehovah. He worshiped there before Jehovah.
Thank you, Jeff, for reading Samuel chapter 1, or 1 Samuel chapter 1. Before I begin my little spiel, any comments or questions? Something that caught your attention in this particular chapter? I realize there's a lot more to Hannah's story, which we'll get there, but one chapter at a time. It takes a little bit more effort. Any comments? Something that caught your eye? Questions at all? It's a relatively simple part of the story so far. Has a few subtle things, which actually are a little bit profound, I hope, which we'll get to as we get through it. Yes?
It's always kind of intrigued me how the priest there is supposed to be such a manly God, and he has such a quick judgment against her while she was praying.
Mm-hmm.
Godly man, what did I say?
Manly God.
Oh.
Yeah, whatever. we got the point.
but how he was so quick to judge her, not really knowing the situation at all. And it almost seems like I was embarrassed. It's like, oh, well, God, may God grant you what you prayed for to kind of get out of there. You know?
That does show a little bit of character as far as Eli and who he was. I think that actually plays a little bit into how he treats his sons in a few chapters from now, in the same embarrassment style. Yes?
Yeah, I'm going on that subject a little bit. You see it in other parts of this story later on, and you'll probably touch on it when you get to those points, but there were women of ill repute that would hang out right at the entrance of the tabernacle.
Oh, yeah.
So he was used to seeing unholy women hanging out around the temple. So when he sees this woman coming in there basically mumbling and babbling to herself,
mm-hmm.
considering the pattern of the women have been coming around in the recent past, because they talked about his sons
who hang out and
kind of
be
women,
with those women, yes.
I can understand that he would have been surprised to see a holy woman. That would have been surprising.
Someone who was genuine.
Someone who was genuine and for real. That would have been more of a surprise to him than seeing a woman of ill repute or a woman who wasn't quite so holy. But the other thing is that when it talks about the relationship of these two wives with this husband,
right.
and about how much he loved Hannah, and it talks about that giving her the special portion.
Mm-hmm.
At least one commentary that I've read, it seems to imply that he actually gave her his portion because he's a Levite. So being a Levite, they had special rights to certain portions
yeah. of the animal, or whatever it may be, were given to certain people.
Yeah,
right.
And so he may have given her that. So that obviously would have promoted this kind of jealousy.
A little bit of jealousy going on. That's true. We'll get there. Not quite yet. I don't want to jump that far ahead regarding the relationship between Hannah, Peninnah, and Elkanah. First of all, we'll get there in a minute. Okay. There's a little bit of introduction that goes with the book of Samuel. As there was introduction with, of course, Joshua and Judges and everything else, there is always some background history regarding this particular book and regarding Samuel and what he does. For those of us who remember, in the book of Judges, we had judges who came and went. Some were good, some were bad. Bad is relative speaking. Some were better leaders, and some were not so good leaders, but they were better maybe prophets. Samson's a great example of one. Was he a leader? Not at all. He didn't lead a living soul. No one ever followed him to do anything. So you couldn't lead worth beans. I mean, he's worthless. But was he a good prophet? Well, actually he was. His whole life and all of his parables were prophetic. So he actually was very talented in the prophetic side as far as being a judge of Israel. But he couldn't muster the people together due to a war. That wasn't a talent of his. On the other hand, you have Jephthah, the opposite extreme. Was he a good prophetic prophet, a leader? No, he was not a prophetic leader. Was he a fantastic military leader? Probably second only to Joshua. Fantastic on the military side. Conquered, outnumbered significantly. Was able to defeat the Midianites and did quite a few other things too. So we had different types of people. Well, now we're actually introducing in Samuel a separation. Throughout the book, we're starting to separate between someone can be a leader while somebody else can be a prophet. They don't necessarily have to be one and the same person as all the judges were supposed to be. So we're going to start dividing a little bit. The people are being separated. Why? Why would God want to do that?
Create dependency.
Say it again?
Create a dependency.
Dependency on?
Each other.
Well, okay. In some ways, yes, creates dependency upon each other in regards that all of Israel is dependent upon one another. But what would be the value of having, for example, in the judge category, you have a military leader and a prophet, someone who speaks to God. Well, in Samuel, we're going that direction. He introduces this concept of having a military leader over here with someone who talks to God over there. Two separate people. It does create a balance. It creates a separation. It starts dividing up the responsibility. Which, of course, the kings. How many of you know that they were unholy kings? Well, it's very hard to find one who wasn't unholy. There are few and far between. And the few that were holy, they made their own mistakes. Prophets, on the other hand, how many of them were kings? Some argue David, sort of, in some ways he was, but for the most part, no. They were separated. And Samuel introduces this. At this point in time, by the way, though Samuel is the last of the judges, Eli is his predecessor. Eli is the one who became a judge after Samson. Eli is one of the unique judge. He is not only judge, he's high priest as well. That hadn't happened yet. No one had been judge and high priest. Moses wasn't judge and high priest, he was just a judge. Joshua was just a judge. You had the Aaron, you had his line, you had Phinehas and Eleazar. They were the high priests, separated people. Well, Eli was a combination of both. How did that happen? Well, the Bible doesn't talk to us about how Eli became the power, he just was. Because what happens if there isn't a judge of Israel? It defaults to the high priest. How would I know? How do you know that? Well, all right, it has to do with the duty and the job of a judge. Judges roam the countryside. They judged on holy matters. They took care of legal issues, moral issues, problems that would occur throughout the whole people, as well as muster the people together to go to war. If the judge isn't around roaming the countryside, well, that's funny, because those same duties are actually very similar to what the high priest's duties are, as far as judging on legal matters, taking care of personal issues that come and go from day to day, year to year. That's their job. They're the ones who reign, and actually for those six cities of refuge, is the Levites that dictate, is this person innocent? Is this person guilty? What do we do to rectify this problem? That's their job. That's their task. All right, so that's what Levites would normally do. So it actually is kind of a natural tendency to go to a high priest to be this particular job. Up to this point, however, we always had separate, independent people. Well, Levi is a unique character. He is the one who combines both. Is he a great judge? Well, that's debatable. Is he a great high priest? That's also debatable. He's just there. He's a person who took a position after Samson died. Because there's no one else. God didn't raise up a judge after Samson. Not until Samuel's born. Okay. So we have a separation that's the process of coming. And we're seeing it at this point. Or we'll see it at this point. As Samuel's introduced, Eli has become separate, who is still in charge of military issues, while Samuel is more prophetic issues. They actually start separating at this point, or early on in Samuel's history. So who is Elkanah? Now we actually go to verse 1. Who is Elkanah? Say it again. Ephraimite? No, he's not Ephraimite. He's from Ephraim, or the mountain area, mountainous region of Ephraim. How do we know he's not Ephraimite? Yeah, later on, we find a little more information.
It says he's the son of Zu, an Ephraimite.
Uh-huh. Well, it has to do with the definition of Ephraimite. Does Ephraimite mean someone from Ephraim, like the tribe, or does it mean from the territory?
Territory.
Ah, okay, well, if you're talking territory, yeah, sure, he's Ephraimite. Talking about tribe, no, he's not. Why? Well, we know we all come here with a little bit of knowledge about Samuel. We know he actually serves in the temple and does sacrifices, right? Are Nazarites, non-Levitical Nazarites, ever allowed to do a sacrifice on behalf of another person? No. Never, ever, 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 ever can they do that. Why not? Because they are not Levites. They're not allowed to. But yet Samuel, we'll find out in a few chapters now, does. That must mean he's Levite, right?
Yeah.
That would be the logical selection. He must be Levite if he can do this. Well, we actually know he's Levite because 1 Chronicles lists his parents and lists his name. He's from the tribe of Kohath, which is one of Levi's sons. Their tribe, they have a few of the few duties in their task. Yes, Richard.
During the time of the Messiah, if you were a Jew in the land of Judah, but if you were a Jew by race and land of Galilee, well, you're a Galilean.
Right.
You're called Galilean.
But your tribe may not be, but your territory is.
But where you're from.
Right.
Your name got the nation you're in.
There's also one other phrase, which I think is quite interesting. I happen to like it. There's one more phrase, more of a sentence, a word. The last word in verse 1, last two words. From the son of Zuf, mine says, from the land of Ephraim. What is something else? Anything else? Last
just
two, three words.
Ephraimite.
What is that? Is it different, the land of Ephraim or Ephraimite?
Yeah, actually, my translations, at least that I have here, don't say Ephraimite. It says Ephrathite.
Right.
Yeah.
It's different.
Different word.
Yeah.
It's not Ephraimite.
No.
It's not from the land of Ephraim. It says Mount Ephraim earlier on in the same verse. We already know he's from the Ephraim territory. Well, say that word again, Sammy. What was that word?
Basically, from
Ephrata. Ephrata. And what is that word actually? No. What does that word actually mean? I'm not going to make you work that hard. Don't worry about it. The word means, I'm in English. I'm not going to try to pronounce it really well. I'm not that great in Hebrew. Ephrathite, or however you wish to pronounce it, is a distinguished person. He's an important individual. That's all it means. He's not from land of Ephraim, well, meaning that he's not Ephraimite. He's not Ephraimite. We already know him. Well, we were about to watch. We'll go look at that just to make sure that come on my little ends. First Chronicles, just to verify that he's actually Levite. Let's see, First Chronicles chapter 6. You don't have to go there. I'll just read it out to you. We'll start in verse 33. And these are the ones who ministered with their sons. And the sons of the Kohathites were Heman, the singer, the son of Joel, the son of Samuel, our current character, the son of Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Eliel, the son of Toa, the son of Zuf, the son of Elkanah, which is another Elkanah, the son of Mathai. It goes all the way down to son of Korah, son of Itzar, son of Kohath, son of Levi. We already know who he is because Chronicles quite clearly defines his family heritage. We know he's Levite. That's not a problem. The issue is that many English Bibles choose to determine him as being an Ephraimite. That's not the real word. He's a distinguished man. He was actually an important person in the tribe of Levi. Not just anybody. He was actually somebody important, somebody of value. That's all it meant. Why does that matter? It has a lot to do with his character. Which is the whole point of chapter 1, is the character of Elkanah and the character of Hannah. That's why we're studying this one chapter. We'll go to chapter 2 and chapter 3 and go on further. But the purpose of these chapters is to discuss the character of these two individuals. That's why it's important to know. He was a distinguished person. He was not an unknown. Most people in the area, at least in Charlotte, would have known who he was or what he did. He was an important individual. It goes to his character. Okay.
I was jealous a couple of things.
Go ahead.
That Hannah would have been the same tribe.
Very likely. Very, very likely. Technically, he can marry outside of Levi, but it's so rarely ever done.
Right.
Most likely, you're right. Most likely. One of the reasons, going along those same lines, is that it would be very difficult for Samuel to serve the temple, to serve in his task, if his mother was not Levite as well as his father, not just one. Both of them are supposed to be. So, can't guarantee his mother was Levite. There's just an extremely high probability that she was. There's also a high probability that Peninnah was not.
Why do you say that?
She was.
How many sons and daughters did Peninnah have?
A lot.
Why would a Levitical man ignore his firstborn children, firstborn son, who should get all the inheritance? But actually, technically, we find out later on in Samuel's life, Samuel gets everything. Though he is far from the firstborn. Actually, she's supposed to have 10 children, Peninnah, at this point in time. 10 children, sons and daughters. It's a lot of kids. But Samuel gets everything. Because most likely the inheritance, which is supposed to go from Levite tribe to Levite to Levite, not from Levite to some other tribe there happens to be, because then it's that the inheritance, which in Levites is minimal, it's just have to do with houses and small properties, is not allowed to leave the Levite line. So most likely, Peninnah and her children are not Levites. Probably also why he didn't love her quite the same way as he did Hannah.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
What you're studying here. The distinguished man is referring to whom?
Elkanah.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah. I won't go into all the details regarding a male, Levitical male role versus Levitical female role, right. But he and his line of inheritance is considered more important than whatever her father had or didn't have. Yes, Kara.
Do we know which order Hannah and Peninnah are in which they married him?
We actually do, sort of. It's strictly Jewish tradition. There is no, you won't, oh, hey, yes, he married Hannah at such and such age, and thus he married Peninnah. No, that's not written anywhere. Tradition is, Hannah and Elkanah were married for 10 years. She was unable to have children. Thus, she had encouraged her husband to find another wife. Sounds familiar? Yeah, sounds familiar? Yeah, we've heard this story before. His other wife, Peninnah, the second wife, is the one who had, of course, all the children and everything else. We don't know much about her beyond her name, and she had a bunch of kids. Strictly Jewish tradition, there was a 10-year time cycle between Hannah and Peninnah, that Hannah was 10 years at minimum, wife longer than Peninnah was. That's all we know. That's all we can tell you about. We don't know anything else. Nobody's ever mentioned or has any more records.
Well, I thought of that because technically, Levite aside, if Hannah's the first wife, then technically Samuel is the first wife.
Well, yes, and sort of. Yeah, it should be that way in many ways. I would tend to agree with you. And maybe that's all should be said. I won't go any further beyond that. Because you can technically go into, well, what did Hagar's son receive? Well, kind of a little bit here, a little bit there. What about Esau and Jacob? Well, who received what? Well, it's a little funky mix of things that happens occasionally.
I was just wondering, because I think it's in Deuteronomy, I think it says that
your first wife is the firstborn child. That would make normally I would agree with you. The only thing that makes a little bit weird is with Leah and Rachel. Because first wife was Rachel.
No.
Oh, sorry, Leah, I apologize. Leah. But the inheritance went through Rachel, Joseph. It did. and that the promise to God was falling went through the wrong person as opposed to going through Reuben.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other siblings who were before Joseph was born.
But it bounced.
Well,
it was Reuben.
But it shouldn't.
Right.
We're going a little bit of theology there, and I can't swear to it that necessarily. All right, firstborn is worked that way. I don't know for sure, but hopefully, I answered a basic idea of your question.
Well, I would submit this is going off your team.
No, it wasn't.
But this is going off your subject. But I would submit that in some ways, Rachel is the true first wife. But that's. Because she was the one he wanted to marry. He's the one she worked for. So even though Laban does a little tricky thing and all that, really, because that's who Jacob thought he was marrying.
He was married.
And he did those vows. He was talking about Rachel.
He had the option. Hey,
Michael,
what
did he do? He said, no. He came to be plastered, I'm sure.
All he had to do was back off,
but he was going to
annoy you.
Well, okay, we're going to get off that subject matter because obviously it has a lot of area of the thread that can go along, and I don't want to have to spend that much time on it. I've barely gotten past verse 1. Okay, so we already talked about the tradition of Peninnah having 10 children, and that's actually verse 8 in case she had a whole lot of kids. You obviously got that hard, similar to Sarah, Hagar, Abraham, kind of similarities as far as how they're going along. Okay, let's go back to Elkanah a little bit. How many times a year did they show up to Shiloh?
Every year.
Every year. Wait a minute. Once a year?
Three times a year.
Probably
three times a year. It's a regular basis.
He has to go three times a year.
Yeah, he has to go three times.
But does all of his family have to go three times a year?
No.
So this particular occasion, he's bringing his whole family.
So if I was
a... Once a year. He must go three times a year as a proper Levite would, as an upstanding, what do you call him? Distinguished man would, but his family doesn't have to. His family doesn't have to come actually, technically, at all. But he brings them once a year. Where did he bring them from? Well, it says, what's how you pronounce this? From Mathayim Zophim. You will be hard pressed to find that on any map anywhere. Because that's actually not a place, that's a description. Do we know what Rathaim Zophim means?
Height.
Oh, sorry, say it again.
Ramah, meaning
height.
Height?
No.
What's the Zophim mean? You're right, the Ramathim means height or from hills. What's Zophim? That's where I'll tell you. Okay, Zophim, seers, lookers, watchers, prophets.
Oh.
All right, those are all interchangeable. From the two prophets. The two high hills. That's where he's from. So the two looking hills, they're prophetic to one another, or they're looking at one another. The two prophet hills. Okay, so what is that supposed to mean? Well, can't swear to it, but I'm saying there's probably, since we already know there are two particular hills that we already know about, curses and blessings, the two prophetic hills. That's probably where he's from. Meaning where he was born. Where is that at? Do you remember? Shechem. Just next to it. Shechem splits the two hills. Mount Ebal, Mount Gerizim. Most likely that's where he's actually from. Why? Well, who owns the city of Shechem? The Kohath Levites. That's probably where he's from. Yeah, that's a city of refuge way up here. Shechem is one of the cities of refuge, all owned by Levites. Most likely, that's where he's from. Where is he currently living? Ramah. He's not actually living at Shechem, that's where he's from. He's from this area. He's living here in Ramah. How old is Ramah? Well, it says he went back to Ramah. Where they live. So he went to Ramah. That's where they live. So he's from Shechem. He goes to Shiloh at least three times a year as a good Levite, but raises his whole family once a year. His whole family is living in Ramah. Where does Samuel end up living? Rama, where his whole family inheritance happens to be at. So does Samuel live in Shiloh his whole life? No.
He went to Shiloh.
He went to Shiloh. He was raised there. He didn't live there. Why does he live there? Samuel's not actually a high priest. He doesn't need to live there. The high priest needs to live there. He doesn't. He's a Levite. He's an important one, but he's not a high priest. So he can certainly, easily, quite happily live in any other town he wishes. He happens to live in the same town where his family inheritance is, which makes logical sense because it's his inheritance. That's where he's at. Most likely is where this whole family is living at. But Elkanah's from up north, up in Shechem. That's all. Did it matter?
Interesting.
It's an interesting point. It's an interesting little thing. Oh, yeah, that's where he's from. Interesting. It might come into play later. We'll see.
Of course it will.
Shh. Don't speak too quickly. all right. So, it implies verse 5. He loves Hannah, apparently, differently or more than does Peninnah. Either it's kind of a different kind of love or just loves her more, don't know. He obviously shows her a whole lot more favor than shows any of his children or any of his other wife. He gives her more, either a better portion, as Tang pointed out, his portion, or just a double portion. Whatever you wish to argue, he gives her more. He likes her. He loves her more. That's what I would get from that. Seems pretty logical statement. How do you think it makes Peninnah feel? Is she happy?
Unloved.
Unloved. Yeah. She has a bunch of kids. She's the mother of his firstborn child. Whether son or daughter, we don't know. She's not really loved, and her children aren't really loved. That's hard. Do you think she might have reason or animosity toward Hannah because of that? Well, of course. Who wouldn't? You married this husband, this guy who, for whatever reason, you got married to him. He already had a wife previously, or still had a first wife, your second one. You gave him everything he wanted, meaning children. But he still doesn't love you. Not in the way that you wanted to be loved. So yeah, there's a lot of animosity there. Shows a lot of anger, a lot of built-up frustration. A lot of digging, I'm sure, periodically occurs, which it points out every time they come, Peninnah apparently rubs it in Hannah's face. I have children, and you don't. So the more Hannah receives from her husband, of course, the more Peninnah apparently gets upset and irritated. So Hannah gets upset. All right, enough of this. I'm sure she's been doing this. If Peninnah traditionally has 10 children at this point in time, how many years do you think Hannah and Elkanah have been married? At least 20. Jewish tradition, at least. Most likely longer. We don't know what their age is. But she's probably not really young anymore. I don't think he's terribly young either. Yes, Ellie.
Is this where the Jewish tradition of if you don't have children in 10 years, if the Orthodoxy actually divorce and you get another wife?
Unfortunately, they do use this as one of the excuses. But
or is it the other way around?
No, well, this storyline, since it's read every year during Feast of Trumpets, it is used in that fashion, but I'm not going to go into divorce. And it's a whole other story, which has its own misguided, weird things going on. But you can, I'm not going to go there. I apologize, but I don't want to discuss that too much. It has its own issues. So, at least 20 years, most likely 20 years, according to Jewish tradition. Could be longer. Not terribly young anymore. She's probably been praying for a child for a long time. So what's so unique about this time? What was the difference? What did she do differently? I'm sure she probably prayed at the temple the past 20 years, every year she went, God, will you please give me a child?
She would offer the child.
Say it again?
You know, previous times she promised to offer the child.
Probably not. Probably not.
Time was running out.
Time was actually getting a lot older at this point in time. She wouldn't be able to have kids for much longer. But I'm willing to bet she probably did not offer the child. No, see, this is a unique scenario that occurs. The child is borrowed. And it's lent to someone, like currency. She knows it's not really hers. But it's not technically sort of God's either. They're sharing Samuel. This is what actually happens. They're sharing, because she sees him every year. He goes up, obviously lives at Ramah later on. So he knows his family. They share him. There's lending and borrowing going on. She struck a deal. Why would we all strike deals? Like, oh God, will you please get me through this one, you know, terrible problem going on, and I'll do X, Y, Z for you until the day I die. And then 3 hours later, you completely forgot and you can move on. If it lasts 3 hours. If you're lucky, it lasts 3 hours. Okay, we make deals all the time. And how many of us remember every deal we've made with God? How many of us broke virtually every deal we've ever made with God? Why is this one so different? Well, something unusual happened this time, which most likely did not happen previous times. Why did it not happen? Because Eli is getting old. His age is important at this point in time in history for Hannah. That in previous years, if he did see her, it would not have been important. Because his eyesight's bad. He can't see very well. Yes.
So he should have known who she was.
He should have known exactly who she was. He would have seen her every single year, probably at the same spot. But did he recognize her? Clearly not. His eyesight's bad. And points out many times later, eventually he's virtually blind. He can't see anything just a few years from now. So his eyesight's getting worse. We don't know the distance of where he's sitting versus where she's standing. It could be 20 feet. It could be 5 feet. We don't know. It doesn't matter. The point is, it occurred. One result happened that most likely had not happened in the past because he couldn't see. He spoke to her and he blessed her. Ah, something different happened. Because Hannah's been praying for a long time. Now, when you pray for something that you absolutely, with your whole life, your mind, your body, your heart, need and want from God, are you praying him with any of the four requirements that God said you will love him? You love him with all your heart? Are you praying with your heart? Yeah, you're praying with your heart. You've probably been praying with your heart for 20 years. Are you love him with your soul? Well, yeah, you're grieved at your soul. You've probably been grieved with your soul for the past 20 years. With your mind, you know who he is. There's not some arbitrary reason she said master of legions, master of many, many, many people. Can you give me one? It wasn't arbitrary she chose that phrase. She's the only one who's ever said it, at least up to this point. And with all of her strength. Well, this is her countenance changes. So yeah, it took her bodily strength. She probably knew that for 20 years. What's the one thing that changed? Eli couldn't see, and he blessed her. The one addition that she needed, that was it. He says, oh, God will bless you. Yeah, oh, was it embarrassment? Most likely. God still will use your embarrassment to make you do things. That's not a limitation of him. But it did something. The high priest blessing you. Can you imagine the Messiah coming over and saying, you know what, Dave? Whatever you're praying for now, granted. That is a huge deal. It will happen. Well, at this point in time, the high priest is the Messiah. That's the representation of it. It's an important thing to happen. It's a big deal for her. Yeah, I'd be happy too. Just like she was happier. Because a blessing happened.
You said Eli couldn't see?
His eyes are going blind. If you go through chapter 3, 4, and 5, his eyes are getting bad. They're getting worse.
Yeah, but her lips moved, but her voice wasn't heard, so he must have.
I can see your lips moving.
Yeah.
If you talk quietly, I can still see your lips moving.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you if you were Adam or Eve or my mother. Because I take my glasses off.
Okay.
That's it. My eyes are really, really bad. I got about a foot and a half range where I can see things clearly. You don't have to be very far away. And I can't see you. So okay. It doesn't mean that he couldn't tell something her lips were moving. I mean, I can see her lips move, and I can see motion happening. But if she's talking too quietly, I'll never understand a word she's saying. So his eyes are getting bad, and of course eventually goes blind. We don't know if he's physically, like we think of blind, or legally blind. He can't actually, nothing is in focus anymore. He doesn't say the difference. It just points that he can't see as a matter of, I think it's 10 years from now. From this point, he can't see at all. So his eyes have been going bad for a while. Yes?
I think it's coincident that just as the time when she's offering the son to the temple that she receives the blessing?
I think that's probably a major factor. So there's a lot of things going on, and the key for the blessing from the high priest, I think, is a pivotal moment. Whether or not offering the son as a Nazirite vow, we've heard that before with Samson. We've heard it. We've heard it. Actually, not point this point. We hear it later on with the Messiah offering the son for service. We've heard, and it has happened. So is that the key? I think that is one of the major factors of it. I think you're absolutely right. I think the blessing is one of the things that God just twisted upon Eli. She needs a blessing. She needs a blessing from the high priest. Yes.
Well, I mean, when you think about it. That kind of a request had been longing for so long, praying for so long, and then, like, would you at least let me be with him some of the time?
For a little bit.
As a Nazirite.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A short period of his life, at least. Yes. I there's a lot of interesting things going on in this particular story. It shows the character of Hannah, doesn't it? What kind of woman is she? Well, I'll say right now, she's stronger of a woman than I am a man. I don't know if I could do that for my son. I don't know, maybe I couldn't. I never put in that situation. That would be hard. Say it again a little louder.
She's committed.
She's committed. That's a good point. At this point, she is. Yes, Carrie.
What's 20 more years without having a child in your house after 20 of them anyway?
That's true. If she loses them after 2 years, well, that's no different. Well, that's maybe a little different. Right? There's some differences. Yes, Kathy.
She also the fact that if God opened her womb, Samuel would not be the last one. That's right.
Right, and which is what happens. She has, I think, 3 more sons and 2 daughters. I think that's what it is. There might be probably 2 sons and 3 daughters. 5 more kids. I don't remember how many. What the breakup is. She's not. That's not the end of her having children.
And the end of her seeing her son.
No, she saw him every year. Every year. Now, we don't know how long she stayed. Was it a day? Was it a week? Was it 6 months? We don't really know. However long they stayed in Shiloh, she may have stayed a little longer sometimes. That's true. Yeah, with a lot of kids at home, maybe not long. Okay, let's move on a little bit. I'm spending up too much time. Okay, so regarding Dave's point, the character of Eli, that he would assume, you know, a drunk woman. And Tam pointed out, well, where she was sitting, there may have been a lot of drunk women. We don't know. His sons apparently took advantage of a few of them. It is heavily criticized, Eli, at this point in his life. Deserving or not, we don't know. One could say yes, probably. That he did a poor job. He was not a very good judge. He was not a very good high priest. He wasn't a horrible. We've had that they will have had worse and will have worse later on. But he wasn't very good, though. He wasn't a very good dad, but he was not. He just wasn't very good at all around. Was he horrible? No, I wouldn't say he was horrible. There are others who are much worse, but he's not that great. So, but at this point, God's been talking to Eli directly. As a judge, God normally does. As a prophet, he normally does. But at this point, we seem to see a deviation. And that from this point forward, God doesn't talk to Eli in the way which Eli remembers him talking to him when Eli was young. God said, thanks, Eli, but I'm moving away from you. I think this is actually an indication to Eli, the embarrassment that Dave pointed out. Oops, what happened? I got it wrong? Something's not right. I think a little click happened in Eli. Something's not right. Because he later on realizes as Samuel gets older, yeah, something's definitely not right. God curses Eli and, of course, all of his family line. And he no longer becomes high priest. By the way, when you look in Chronicles and say, oh, the lineage of high priest, is Eli's name there? No.
No, his
whole family's dead. He, it's as if he was never high priest. He did not exist. But he was high priest almost his whole life. He was an older man. As far as the high priest lineage is concerned, he didn't happen. His brother got it. Meaning his brother's lying. But he didn't. Because of this separation. God saying, Eli, too much. I won't take this anymore. So I think this is a beginning of the end for Eli. You had your hand up.
I think it's very interesting that his blessing brought about the person through which God's curse was brought on Eli.
And it's very, very well... what's the word? Juxtaposition, I think that's what it's called. Bringing two things back to them. The blessing that Eli gave brought about Eli's own curse. Because the person who produced Eli's curse. From Samuel. That's a very interesting point. I haven't really thought about that too much, but that's an interesting point.
Well, did the curse come through Samuel?
It's the demise. And Samuel was his replacement.
Yeah.
Samuel took over. Yeah.
God was the one that cursed him.
Right. But Samuel was the one who replaces Eli. So Eli blesses you, thank you, you produce a child, and this child now replaces me.
Whoops.
Not quite what I had in mind when I blessed you, but okay. That's what we're discussing. I'm going to have to skip a few points because I'm getting a little bit over time. Let's see. Okay, let's skip ahead a little bit. So, verse 19, I think it is. So, they rose in the morning. They prostrated themselves. They bowed down. That's who Elkanah, Hannah, everybody else there is. Bows down before God. They leave. They go back to their home in Ramah. Which, mind you, also happens to be right next door to Ai, but that's a whole other story going on there. Remember Ai from Joshua's time? Ramah is the field in which Joshua built his men up and he got ready to attack Ai on the second time with the ambush. Interesting location, but that's a whole other story. So he goes back home to Ramah, where, of course, his family lives. Knows his wife, presumably 9 months later, maybe a year, we don't really know for sure. Samuel's born. What time of year was that? Well, tradition is, the year, when they go down to Shiloh every year, that is the fall feasts. And the fall feasts in particular because on Feast of Trumpets, Hannah's story is read every single year and has been for almost 2,000 years. Her story is read at Feast of Trumpets as the Haftorah portion, or one of the Haftorah portions. It's one of the first ones ever read at Trumpets. So most likely this occurred for the fall feasts. We don't know exactly which one, but it doesn't really matter. The point is, that's probably the time of year which he took his family in. Why? That's the time of year which all the harvests come in, everybody's happy, we have all these wonderful things, God bless us through this coming winter. A logical place to go ask God for help and to give him everything that you've got, or a portion of it. 9 months later, early summer, late spring, we don't know if it was a holy day. Could be, maybe not. You know, Pentecost or Shavuot is that time of year. We don't know if he was born then, but he's born around that same time. She weans, she doesn't go back obviously next year for about 2 years now. She weans Samuel until he's 24, roughly 24 months old. Basically about 2 years. Does anybody recall, by the way, I should have mentioned this a second ago, Hannah is classified as a prophetess. She's not just a woman, she's a prophetess. Of the seven women in the Bible, she is one of the seven prophetesses, but she's one of them. She dedicates Samuel for a lifetime of service to working for the temple of God, right? Working for God. What is the Levitical lifetime? The latter.
50.
50 years is the Levitical lifetime, meaning that you serve God for 50 years. Either from 50 years old or 50 years of being the beginning of service. And then you stop.
Step down.
Retire.
You retire. Go You know, have a garden, do something else, whatever it is. You are no longer in the service of God. How old was Samuel when he died? When he dies, we haven't gotten it yet. You don't look it up, I'll tell you. 52. 52 years old and he dies. He's no longer in the service of God. He has completed his lifetime, the vow which Hannah gives. She's a prophetess. The vow which she gave. A lifetime of service, which is a Levite's 50 years of service. God is yours for 50 years. At the time of weaning, which at this point in time is 24 months, 2 years old, she brings him to God. 2 years old. You have him for a lifetime, 50 years. 50 years go by, he's 52, he drops dead. Yeah, thanks.
That's young.
It is very young. He has kids and whatnot too, so they grow on. But
is there a relation between that and the two?
That's a good point. I don't know. I don't know what year this took place, so I couldn't tell you there. I would think so, just because the time of year Samuel would have likely been born is Shavuot, which is all centered around Pentecost, the cycle of 50. But I can't swear to it, so I don't know. It didn't say what year it happened. They got, you know, a guess of plus or minus 10.
More like the length of
right. But if it happened during that time period, which would have been, could have been that year, it would have been 50 years later, it would be a beautifully done story. Unfortunately, it wasn't recorded, so we don't know. But it would have been interesting if that was the case. Okay. We can ask him. Yeah, we'll ask him later. No, I'll call him this afternoon. Okay. So, 52 years, 50 years. She prophesied, she said a lifetime, he gave a lifetime, his lifetime ends. Pretty strong prophet, actually. Rather impressive. Few predict the death of someone that accurately. Not that she was intending to predict his death. She was intending to predict his service. The time which he was on loan to God. For 50 years.
She's just lost.
It was loan. It was a lending. I will lend you for this lifetime. God, he's not mine. He's not yours. We're making an exchange. 50 years later, the exchange ends. Okay. Let's move on. It is true. I think it's just fascinating. Let's see. So let's move on. I'm going to end the chapter real quick. I apologize for those of you that I missed things. 28. Go straight through 28. Let's see. Oh, let's go 27 first. This is Hannah. She's presenting Samuel to Eli. This is the child that I prayed for. The Lord granted me my request that I asked him. Furthermore, I have dedicated to the Lord all the days that he lives, which has to be 50 more years. He is dedicated to the Lord. Then he prostrated himself to Hashem, which prostrates to the Lord. Your Bibles most likely say they. Prostrated, they worship God. Most of them say, translate the word they. It's not they. It is he. Who is he?
So I was going to ask, which is it?
He's No, it's not Samuel.
He Eli?
It's Eli. Eli, he's the subject matter, by the way. He's the one who she's talking to. It's not Sam, who's not talking to. He is the subject matter. He is the person. He's Eli. So Eli bows himself, crosses up before God. How many times is the high priest supposed to do that? Not very often. It happens sometimes, but not very often. He recognized something. That God performed a miracle. Because she reminded him, by the way, 2 years ago, you were here. We had this conversation. And he recognized, this took place. This happened.
Because he blessed her.
Because he blessed her and because she dedicated her son. Wow, I dropped my knees pretty quick too. Yes, Ellen.
Although Hanukkah didn't exist then, it's the only celebration that ends exactly at a feast. And if she was at Sukkot, no, let's see. If she conceived at Hanukkah, the first year he misses her, she's not there. The second year, then he wouldn't have been. He has to be 2 years old.
He has to be 2 years old. He's completely weaned. Yeah, when he starts.
Yeah.
Don't try to pinpoint the time of year. I've tried that. You can't. Yeah. All we know is that she probably went there during Feast of Trumpets. That's best she can say. We don't know for sure if she... whether or not she conceived immediately, a month later, 3 months later. We don't know. It doesn't really matter. The point is, child's weaned if she goes back. Whether she makes a special trip. Could have made a special trip on his 24th month-old or two-year-old mark to go down to dedicate to son. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But his point of weaning, no longer hers once he's weaned. So she doesn't go down to him once he turns 2 years old.
She had to.
She's actually taking away from God the service that she promised him. That wouldn't have been a good thing. So anyway, yes, Jeff.
I just want to point out that her name means favored.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Oh, my little scribblings. Okay, that's Shemuel is the name. Hannah is her name. She created his name, by the way. His name didn't exist before this moment. His name did not exist before she named him Samuel. Meaning, no one else prior has ever been named Samuel.
Okay.
Because Samuel, the word, doesn't exist.
Oh, I got you.
She took two words and contracted them together and said, this is what you will be. Shuel Mua.
Of God, or
get my little notes back up here. As I should have mentioned that earlier. Let's go back to my page. Give me half a second. Since he was lent to God, was he also lent to her?
Yeah.
Yes. So, Shuel, Muel, borrowed from God. Meaning she's naming him a name which she knows she has borrowed him from God. But when she goes to the high priest and says, I am lending him, or he is now lent to you, God's borrowing from her? No. Eli is borrowing from her. God's not.
Okay.
God is the ownership of Samuel. That was the deal. He is yours. God owns him. She borrowed him. Borrowed from God, and she's lending him to Eli for service. Yes, Ellie, I had to tell us quits.
That's a good way to remember your commitment. You name your child Borrow. And every time you say Borrow.
He's borrowed. That's true. I apologize for going over time. I know it's a hot day, but there's a few other points I would love to talk about, but it's not important now. We'll talk about some other time, because I'll go to chapter 2 in a couple weeks from now. Thank you for your time.